1081, The Hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Brian Lynn, Faith Perlow, and Dan Novak. Later, Steve Ember will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, here is Brian Lynn.
South Korea's new president, Yoon Suk-yeol, has offered North Korea an economic assistance plan in exchange for giving up its nuclear weapons program. Yoon made the offer Tuesday during a speech at his official swearing-in ceremony in Seoul. He said his government is ready to work with the international community to present an audacious plan to resolve North Korea's nuclear threat. Yoon is beginning his 5-year term after North Korea launched a series of missile tests in recent months. During his campaign, Yoon promised to take a stronger position on North Korea than former President Moon Jae-in. Yoon said he wants to strengthen South Korea's 70-year military alliance with the United States. And he wants to build up South Korea's own missile program to defend against North Korean threats. Yoon presented his speech Tuesday to a crowd gathered outside of Parliament. While North Korea's nuclear weapons programs are a threat, the door to dialogue will remain open so that we can peacefully resolve this threat, he said. Yoon added that his proposed plan could greatly strengthen North Korea's economy and improve the quality of life for its people. Yoon did not provide many details about the plan, but his national security adviser, Kim Song-han, spoke to Reuters in February. Kim said Yoon's team could offer North Korea quick sanctions reduction or economic aid in exchange for denuclearization measures. In addition to the recent missile tests, U.S. and South Korean officials have warned that North Korea might be preparing for its first nuclear weapons test since 2017. Yoon spoke about South Korea's growing economic problems. He said a worsening job market and expanding income inequalities had led to growing political divisions in the country. Yoon promised to carry out new policies aimed at improving economic growth to help all citizens. After his ceremony, Yoon moved to a new office at a former defense ministry building. He held his first meeting with advisors and appointed 7 cabinet nominees who had passed confirmation hearings. I'm Brian Lynn.
A famous painting of Marilyn Monroe by American artist Andy Warhol sold for $195 million on Monday. That is the most ever paid in a public sale for a work by an American. Warhol painted Shot Sage Blue Marilyn in 1964. The colorful image shows Monroe with yellow hair, blue eyeshadow, and bright red lips with a rich blue background. The sale took place at Christie's Auction House in New York. Representatives from Christie's said the painting became the costliest work of art from the 20th century ever auctioned. The Warhol painting passed the earlier record holder, Jean-Michel Basquiat. His 1982 painting, untitled, of a skull-like face, sold for a record $110.5 million in 2017 at Sotheby's in New York. Warhol created more than one image of Monroe. The Shot Sage Blue Marilyn painting has been shown in museums around the world. Christie's said an unnamed buyer made the purchase Monday night. When the auction was announced earlier this year, Christie's estimated it could go for as much as $200 million. "It's an amazing price," said Alex Rotter, chairman of Christie's 20th and 21st Century Art Department. "Let it sink in. It's quite something." The earnings of the sale will go to the Thomas and Doris Amann Foundation Zurich, which put the painting up for auction. The foundation aims to help children with health care and educational programs.
A Nigerian dance group with a disabled member has suddenly gained popularity after posting their videos to social media. One video has tens of thousands of views. The dancers are children as young as 5 years old. They are called the Incredible Kids. Their videos have been posted to the video sharing service Instagram. The children dance quickly to popular Nigerian songs. One dancer is 15-year-old Joshua Anum. Joshua has a disability. He lost his arm after an accident at the age of 5. Joshua's father left him and his 8 brothers and sisters. They did not have much to eat when growing up. But that has not stopped Joshua from dancing, and it has changed his life. "Before I came here, I used to go to parties. I used to fight anywhere I went, and I was not going to school," said Joshua. "Since coming here, I have started school, and I read and dance." Vera Anum is Joshua's mother. She said that she was very sad when the doctors removed his arm, but now she is happy and proud of him. "Everybody thought he will not be useful in life. Our people at home said he is finished because somebody whose hand has been amputated from childhood, what can he do?" Vera said. She said, "See him today. At least the whole world is seeing him, watching him, how he is performing." Maliki Emmanuel is the dance group's creator. Emmanuel said that many of the dancers do not have a good family life, so he has offered them support and a home. The students often gather around Emmanuel in his chair at his home and watch music videos together, so they can get new ideas for the dance moves and performances. Emmanuel hopes to expand his group with more children who need a home and love to dance. "I can teach them, then we will bring them to the crew," Emmanuel said. Money from the dancers' performances helps pay the cost of the children's education. I'm Faith Perlow.
Millions of students in the United States go to schools with police officers present. The officers are known as school resource officers, or SROs. They are meant to keep schools and students safe. Police in schools date back to the late 1940s, but school shootings, including the 1999 shooting at Columbine High School and the Sandy Hook Elementary School shooting in 2012, led to more policing of students. Between 2006 and 2018, the number of schools with at least one SRO increased from 42% to 61%, says the organization the Center for Public Integrity. But with more officers, students have become more likely to have interactions with law enforcement, which could result in arrest and possible criminal charges. Federal funding is available for schools that want to hire police. But following the 2020 murder of George Floyd by a police officer in Minneapolis, Minnesota, cities and states started to rethink their ideas of policing, and policing in schools. Many school districts around the country either defunded or totally removed SRO programs. Los Angeles, the nation's second largest school district, cut its SRO budget by one-third. Chicago, the third largest, cut it by more than half. Other districts fully ended their agreements with police departments. But now some districts that removed officers are considering bringing them back. Montgomery County, Maryland, largely removed funding for SROs in 2020. But this year, district officials said there was an increase in serious incidents of crimes, including fights and robberies in schools. In January, a shooting took place at one of the county's high schools. In April, the county voted to bring police officers back to schools. The county says the officers will go through more training than they did before the SRO funding was cut. Opponents of SRO programs argue that law enforcement is not the answer to safety incidents at schools that are linked to mental health problems. They argue that schools should instead put their funding towards more mental health resources for students, like hiring more social workers and mental health experts. Studies have also shown that non-white students are much more likely to be referred to police than white students. An investigation by the Center for Public Integrity found that black students are 2 times more likely to be referred to the police than white students. Students with disabilities are also 2 times more likely to be referred to law enforcement. Not all referrals or citations become arrests with criminal charges, but a citation may mean a student must appear before a judge or other law enforcement officials. The effects of interactions with police can be serious. A 2020 study from Tulane University found that black students who experience contact with the police by 8th grade have 11 times greater odds of being arrested when they are 20 years old than white students. Research has also shown that officers present in school increases the likelihood children will interact with police. A University of Florida study found that student behavior that would have otherwise occurred and been handled by school personnel is more likely to come to the attention of law enforcement. In Montgomery County, black students made up half of all arrests in schools in 2020, but they make up just 1/5 of the student population. Amir Whitaker is with the American Civil Liberties Union of Southern California. He told the Los Angeles Times last year that the fight to remove school police is part of the fight for racial justice. Some districts have found that removing officers from schools may lead to more safety problems. Alexandria, Virginia, decided to remove SROs from city schools in July 2021. The city also voted to redirect funding for SROs to mental health services. But after several incidents involving students and guns, the city changed its decision just 3 months later. This year, the city council voted to fund the SRO program through 2023. I'm Dan Novak.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. I'm Steve Ember.
A stunning and cowardly strike on the United States. The president vows the killers will pay for this attack on America.
The United States changed as a result of the September 11th terrorist attacks. CBS newsman Dan Rather expressed what many Americans were feeling.
You will remember this day as long as you live.
On the morning of that sunny September day that came to be known as 9/11, the nation came under attack from Al-Qaeda, an extremist group led by Osama bin Laden. Its targets were world-famous buildings representing America's economic and military power. Al-Qaeda operatives hijacked four American passenger airplanes. The hijackers were from Middle Eastern countries. Each group included a pilot trained to fly two kinds of Boeing airliners, the 757 and the 767. At 8:46 on that morning, one group of hijackers flew a Boeing 767 into the North Tower of the World Trade Center in New York City. 17 minutes later, another group flew a second 767 into the Trade Center's South Tower. The planes exploded in fireballs that sent clouds of smoke into the air. The intense heat of the burning jet fuel from the planes caused structural failures that brought down both buildings. About an hour after the first plane hit the World Trade Center, another group of Al-Qaeda operatives flew a 757 airliner into the Pentagon, the headquarters of the Defense Department in Arlington, Virginia. The plane exploded against a wall of the huge building where more than 20,000 people worked. A fourth group had taken control of another 757, but some of the passengers on that flight, United 93, had heard about the terrorist attacks through phone calls to their families. Several passengers and crew members attempted to retake control of the plane. It crashed near the town of Shanksville, Pennsylvania. Investigators later said the hijackers probably planned to attack the Capitol, a major government building in Washington, D.C., where Congress meets. There was also concern that the White House could have been a target. The 9/11 attacks saw the worst loss of lives on American soil since Japan attacked Pearl Harbor in 1941. That attack caused the United States to enter World War II.
The pictures of airplanes flying into buildings, fires burning, huge structures collapsing, have filled us with disbelief, terrible sadness, and a quiet, unyielding anger.
As expressed by President George W. Bush on 9/11, the attacks left Americans in a state of shock and disbelief. But that was soon replaced by anger and a resolve that such events would not be allowed to happen again.
These acts of mass murder were intended to frighten our nation into chaos and retreat. But they have failed. Our country is strong. A great people has been moved to defend a great nation. Terrorist attacks can shake the foundations of our biggest buildings, but they cannot touch the foundation of America. These acts shatter steel, but they cannot dent the steel of American resolve.
At Ground Zero, the site of the World Trade Center destruction, rescue efforts continued into the night. New York City Mayor Rudy Giuliani was asked if Arab American or Muslim groups in New York might be targeted due to the nature of the attacks.
Just the opposite. They will receive extra protection. The particular individuals responsible and the groups responsible, that's up to law enforcement, and it's up to the United States government to figure out. And citizens of New York should, even if they have anger, which is understandable, it isn't their place to get involved in this. Then they're just participating in the kind of activity we just witnessed. And New Yorkers are not like that.
And Giuliani spoke of the strength of spirit of the people of his city.
People tonight should say a prayer for the people that we've lost and be grateful that we're all here. And tomorrow, New York is going to be here, and we're going to rebuild, and we're going to be stronger than we were before.
On September 20th, President Bush went before a joint session of Congress to declare a war on terror.
Our war on terror begins with Al-Qaeda, but it does not end there. It will not end until every terrorist group of global reach has been found, stopped, and defeated.
President Bush explained that the war on terror would be different from other wars.
Our response involves far more than instant retaliation and isolated strikes. Americans should not expect one battle, but a lengthy campaign, unlike any other we have ever seen. We will starve terrorists of funding, turn them one against another, drive them from place to place until there is no refuge or no rest. And we will pursue nations that provide aid or safe haven to terrorism. Every nation in every region now has a decision to make. Either you are with us or you are with the terrorists. From this day forward, any nation that continues to harbor or support terrorism will be regarded by the United States as a hostile regime.
President Bush demanded that the Taliban rulers of Afghanistan stop sheltering Osama bin Laden and surrender him. The president also called on the Taliban to close terrorist training camps in Afghanistan. The Taliban refused. They demanded evidence that Osama bin Laden had been involved in the attacks of 9/11. They said that if such evidence was provided, he would be tried in an Islamic court. The United States refused to provide evidence. On October 7th, the United States and Britain launched airstrikes against Taliban targets. What became known as the War on Terror had begun. Tribal groups from the opposition Northern Alliance led a ground attack. But suicide bombers had killed their leader, Ahmad Shah Massoud, on September 9th, 2 days before the 9/11 attacks. By November, Taliban control began to collapse in several provinces. Taliban forces fled Kabul, the capital. But the ouster of the Taliban government did not mean the end of the war on terror. Some of President Bush's advisors had long supported an invasion of Iraq. As early as October 2001, Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld suggested that military action against Iraq was possible. Government officials accused Iraq of having links to terrorist groups like Al-Qaeda. They noted that Iraqi leader Saddam Hussein had used chemical weapons, and they said he was seeking to develop biological and nuclear weapons as well. In October 2001, Congress passed the USA Patriot Act. This law provided the government with more power to gather information about suspected terrorists in the United States. Critics said the law invaded constitutional rights to privacy. Civil liberties groups said the Patriot Act gave law enforcement and other agencies too much power. In January 2002, President Bush gave his State of the Union report to Congress. He accused some nations of supporting terrorist organizations. He said the United States would not wait to be attacked by such groups. Instead, it would strike first at the countries that sheltered them. The president identified three nations, North Korea, Iran, and Iraq, as supporters of terror.
States like these and their terrorist allies constitute an axis of evil, arming to threaten the peace of the world. By seeking weapons of mass destruction, these regimes pose a grave and growing danger. They could provide these arms to terrorists, giving them the means to match their hatred.
In 2002, the United States opened a detention center at its naval base at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. Some of the fighters arrested in Afghanistan were sent there. They were not considered prisoners of war. Instead, the detainees were treated as unlawful enemy combatants. As such, the Bush administration said they did not have the same rights as war prisoners under international treaties. In the United States, the government also detained some foreign citizens, mostly for violating immigration laws. No terrorism charges were brought against these detainees. Human rights activists and some legal experts protested the detentions. After 9/11, government agencies were criticized for failing to prevent the terrorist attacks. Critics said the agencies should have been working together to gather intelligence. Government officials said part of the issue involved legal restrictions on the gathering and sharing of intelligence. In January 2003, the Department of Homeland Security opened for business.
Maybe you see something suspicious, but you don't want to get involved. It's nothing, you think. Can you be sure?
There was a lot to do.
If you see something, say something. Report suspicious activity to local authorities.
Transportation security, immigration, law enforcement, border protection. It represented the biggest government reorganization in more than half a century. All or part of 22 federal agencies and departments were combined into the new agency. Its job, to keep America safe in a world that had changed in a single day. The War on Terror, which began after the 9/11 terrorist attacks on the United States, escalated in March 2003, when a coalition of American-led forces invaded Iraq. The mission, as stated by President Bush and British Prime Minister Tony Blair, was to disarm Iraq of weapons of mass destruction, to end Saddam Hussein's support for terrorism, and to free the Iraqi people.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.